It's time to eat.
Get in my belly.
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Ross Tucker and Evan Silva.
Me so hungry.
On the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby. Last week was so fun going through Evan's fantasy rookie dynasty rankings, which, by the way, as we discussed last week, are very similar to what his rankings would be just for this year for these rookies in any type of best ball or redraft league. It's basically his rookie rankings, but the dynasty element makes it he's a little bit more forward thinking, maybe just a little bit. Today is 1 through 25. I cannot wait. We're presented by SeatGeek and Saks Underwear. Neither one of them is it like officially for this podcast. I just love them both so much. I'm mentioning them again because Saks Underwear is so legit, especially when it gets hot and sticky this time of year. Do yourself, don't even do it for me, do it for yourself. SaksUnderwear.com/Tucker. Use the code Tucker. The stuff is awesome, period. As is SeatGeek. If you don't have the app on your phone, you are paying too much probably when you get tickets to anything. Comedy, a theater show, whatever, sporting events. So make sure you take care of those two things. The last two contestants, Evan, for the June MFL 10. We're just about wrapping up our May MFL 10 draft. We are also announcing the last two June MFL 10 contestants. And there's a little bit of a controversy here. I just realized this, Evan. One's name is Elliot Nolan, who forwarded several Amazon purchases to me, Ross at RossTucker.com. The other one, I just realized the guy's name is Joe Silva, and he forwarded a sponsor confirmation from Saks Underwear. He loved it. Is he related to you, Joe Silva? Do you have any relatives named Joe? Because I'm sure, like, if we were like a real entity, there's probably rules that say family members of, like, the host cannot participate.
I do have a cousin named Joe Silva, but Joe is a very common name, and I highly doubt that this is my cousin Joe Silva.
I don't know. We might have to card him. We have to get ID from this Joe Silva who took advantage of Saks Underwear. So we're all booked up now for the June MFL 10, but we got something awesome coming your way for July. And we might start to introduce some of the contestants next week. Throughout the month of June, we have 10 entries, Evan, to a My FFPC High Stakes League in July. $35 entries each. They're giving us 10, or actually 12, you and I as well, 12 $35 entries. For My FFPC, we will announce the winners throughout the month of June and then have that draft in early July. If you'll remember, we had a guy come on, you know, earlier in the off season to discuss My FFPC. Have you played any of those leagues yet, Evan?
I've played one. I need to play more. We're finishing up our magazine stuff, and then after that, I'm going to have some more time to jump into FFPC leagues. I really enjoyed the format. It really emphasizes and highlights people who have great depth of knowledge. I mean, there are 27 rounds in these, and you have to draft kickers. And you have to get kickers who have job security. So it's a little bit more strategic than a regular MFL 10. And I mean, this is free money, man. So I'm excited for this one. Everybody loves free money.
$35 free and the chance to win a whole lot more. If you want to hear more about the My FFPC leagues, if you remember, we spoke with Darren Armani back on March 29th. He was awesome. He's a Philly guy. He loves these leagues. They're still best ball leagues, so they're similar to MFL 10, but we wanted to give them a try. So We're booked up now for the June MFL 10, but let us know if you want one of these high-stakes $35 free entries. Just forward me, Ross at RossTucker.com, any sponsor confirmation that you can get over at RossTucker.com. We've got a new website up, by the way. There's a couple pictures up of Evan. He looks like he's got the baby face thing going. So go check it out. Thanks to the guys at PromptInternet.com over at RossTucker.com. Speaking of Prompt, I know, Evan, you can be long-winded on some of these guys, especially when you love them. So let's promptly get to the number 25 guy on your list. And I can say, not many people can say this, Evan, but I can say I saw him play live last year, and that wow. is Chad Williams, the wide receiver who tore up the combine out of Grambling. I saw him play against Southern in the Bayou Classic. I was there. I broadcast that game for NBC, and that guy, the numbers he put up the last couple years in the SWAC were crazy. I don't really know why he didn't get more love than he did.
Well, he wasn't invited to the combine.
So what did he do? Oh, he tore up his pro day. And
he tore up
and
his
was
pro
it the
day,
Senior
right.
Bowl, so or was it the Senior Bowl, or was it the Shrine game that he tore it up?
I think he went to both. He went to the East-West Shrine and the Senior Bowl. He was so good at the East-West Shrine that they brought him to the Senior Bowl. So he was at both of those. He had some sort of arrest on his record, and I think that that may have cost him a chance to go to the combine. But you're right. He did put up in crazy measurables. I mean, he ran 4.43 at 6'1", 207 at his pro day. The depth chart in – so I don't know that Chad Williams, you know, coming from Grambling and going to the Arizona Cardinals is going to give you anything in year one. But the depth chart could really open up after year one. Larry Fitzgerald looks like he's in his final year. Jerron Brown and John Brown, both in contract years. Andre Ellington, who they moved – to receiver, he also is in a contract year, and J.J. Nelson has 2 years left and is, you know, a smallish role player. Chad Williams has been openly discussed by the Cardinals OC Harold Goodwin as a guy that they want to become Larry Fitzgerald's heir apparent. Harold Goodwin could potentially become the Cardinals' next head coach if Bruce Arians moves on along with Larry Fitzgerald and Carson Palmer after this season. And if you look at the track record of the Cardinals under Steve Keim, they have had a lot of small school hits. Chad Williams, of course, coming from Grambling, but David Johnson out of Northern Iowa, John Brown out of Pittsburgh State, Rodney Gunter out of Delaware State, I believe, J.J. Nelson out of UAB, which is now doesn't even have a football program. And then in the later rounds, they've gotten quality snaps out of guys that are still in the NFL and were drafted really late in Earl Watford and Walt Powell, and that's only like a 3 or 4 year sample. So there are a lot of positive indicators for Chad Williams. I think he's a very interesting third round dynasty rookie pick.
Number 24 is another wide receiver, Kenny Galladay, a guy I know you love. You've been tweeting about pictures of him and stuff. Videos. He went to the Detroit Lions, and there are people that are already projecting him to be the number three receiver for them.
Yeah, he transferred from North Dakota up to NIU, Northern Illinois, for his final two seasons. He became the first receiver in Northern Illinois history to ever have 2,000-yard receiving seasons. And he did that, of course, in his only 2 years there. And he did that despite having five different starting quarterbacks in those two seasons. His measurables, as I tweeted the other day, very similar to A.J. Green. Obviously, I don't think that he's A.J. Green. Just, you know, saying that his measurables are similar. He's 6'4", 218, long, smooth receiver, has experience playing both outside and in the slot. There have been some suggestions that he could take on the Anquan Boldin role on the interior of the Lions offense with Golden Tate and Marvin Jones staying outside. I think ultimately we will see Galladay in the slot and outside along, you know, kind of rotating with Golden Tate. But yeah, right now it looks like Kenny Galladay has a realistic chance to play in three receiver sets as soon as week one. So I think that there is a chance we could get some early impact from Kenny Golladay. And long term, I mean, he's a big athletic receiver who has a chance to grow with Matthew Stafford. So I like the short and long term outlook for Kenny Golladay.
What about number 23 on your list, James Conner? We all know his backstory. At least, I don't know, a lot of us know his backstory. But what do you think about James Conner going to Pittsburgh, staying in Pittsburgh with the Steelers?
Yeah, he was the ACC Offensive Player of the Year with 26 rushing touchdowns as a 19-year-old sophomore. And then one game into his junior year, he tore his right MCL. And during his rehab, he was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. Incredibly, he came back and was the starter the immediate following season. He had 216 carries last year. Wasn't great. You know, I mean, he's coming back from cancer, essentially. And he didn't look the same that he did as a 19-year-old sophomore. But, I mean, I think that that's pretty forgivable considering what he went through. He still averaged over 5 yards per carry, had a career-high 21 receptions, and he's drafted by Pittsburgh, which has really nothing beyond James Conner and Le'Veon Bell at running back. And Le'Veon Bell, of course, is on a one-year deal at this moment. He's had multiple suspensions in the past. He's had multiple severe injuries in the past. James Conner, you know, if something happens to Le'Veon, James Conner looks right now like he would move immediately into the starting role for the Steelers, which has been a highly productive role in the past, of course, with D'Angelo Williams. James Conner, 6'2", 233 pounds. And I think that, you know, he didn't test great at the combine, but I think that he could regain athleticism the further he gets away, the further he gets removed from that that diagnosis.
How about number 22, Jeremy McNichols? It's interesting. I don't think Fran Duffy, a huge fan of his on the College Draft podcast, but he did potentially land in a really good situation.
Yeah, my comparison after watching Jeremy McNichols was to Travaris Cadet with a chance to become a Bilal Powell type of player. And you mentioned how Fran didn't love him, and Josh Norris didn't love him either, and I totally get why, because he's still a work in progress as a runner. He played wide receiver in high school, and his receiving skills show up on tape. Number one, he had 88 receptions over his final two seasons in college and 103 for his career at Boise State. I mean, just he caught a ton of passes. And when you watch him play, I mean, the Boise State coaches knew that that was his strength. They would line him up at, like, flanker and split end. And, I mean, they would run him out of the backfield on vertical passes deep down the middle. He's got to get better as an inside runner. I remember, you know, a player who had this same sort of profile where they were a high school wide receiver, and they were still kind of learning how to become an interior runner was David Johnson, was sort of like this. And David Johnson, of course, was an incredible athlete at the combine. Jeremy McNichols was one of the best athletes at the combine in this class. So I think that there's a lot of room for growth here from Jeremy McNichols. Right now he's recovering from shoulder surgery, so he's going to miss all of OTAs. At the Bucs post-draft press conference, Dirk Cutter suggested that McNichols still needs to earn a spot on the roster. I mean, they've got Doug Martin there. They've got Jacquizz Rodgers, Charles Sims, Peyton Barber. And so McNichols, he definitely needs to earn his spot, and that's going to set him back a little bit. But I don't think the Bucs are tied to any of those guys long term. Jacquizz Rodgers is on like a 1 or 2 year deal, and you know he's been kind of a journeyman in the NFL. The Bucs seem to have soured on Charles Sims, who I think McNichols would play a similar role to. And then Doug Martin, of course, he's very year to year. His guaranteed money was eliminated by that suspension, and the suspension in and of itself is going to have the Bucs continually looking to find, you know, new running back talent. And I think they found one here in the fifth round with Jeremy McNichols.
Let's get to another quasi running back wide receiver. Really curious to get your thoughts on him. Obviously, this guy is so fun to watch But yeah. Sometimes these guys just don't get the ball enough in the NFL. Curtis Samuel with Carolina, yeah. Second round pick.
He is a really, really tough guy to like, you know, you feel more comfortable when you can envision the role for a player and how he's going to be used. You know, it's really easy to envision the role for like Leonard Fournette. It is less easy to envision exactly what Curtis Samuel is going to do. Now, Josh Norris is a Panthers fan, and so he's, you know, kind of plugged into them a little bit more than most people. He thinks that Curtis Samuel has a chance to be like a combination Philly Brown and Ted Ginn for the Panthers. And Philly Brown played a lot of slot receiver, and Ted Ginn, of course, was their vertical receiver. Theoretically, Samuel has that vertical potential because he ran 4.31 coming out of Ohio State, which is ridiculous. But you don't see him make a lot of vertical plays when you watch him play at Ohio State. I mean, he was used a lot more like Percy Harvin. He did play a ton of slot receiver. Pro Football Focus charted Samuel with 425 snaps last year at slot receiver and 220 at running back. You know, I have him low here relative to other people in my rankings, but I have been getting a lot of him like in the 17th round in MFL 10s because I think that he has a potential to give me some big weeks over the course of the season. And I got him recently in a dynasty draft at pick like 2.07. So he's kind of all over the board. You know, from draft to draft, he's going to go in different spots. I know he's been a first round pick in some dynasty rookie leagues. But yeah, I mean, he's a tough guy to figure, but man, that speed is compelling, and where he was drafted, you know, second round is compelling. And I mean, he's got upside because he caught a lot of passes and played a lot of slot receiver at Ohio State.
Let's get to number 20 on your list. I know this is a guy that you liked and a lot of people liked, Marlon Mack, the running back that went to a pretty good situation with the Colts in the fourth round.
He's a really, really explosive player, Marlon Mack, a dynamic playmaker. He averaged over 6 yards per carry in his career with 65 receptions in 3 seasons. Another guy that his coaching staff at South Florida would line him up as a receiver often. And I thought that after watching him, he could potentially become a Tevin Coleman type of player in the pros. Not necessarily like a workhorse feature back, but a guy that when he's in, the coaches are trying to get him the ball because he can make big plays happen. Now, he's far from polished. I mean, he needs to learn how to blitz protect. He bounced runs to the outside way too often. I mean, he was an undisciplined player at USF. So he is going to – I mean, he's going to have a learning curve. His landing spot was pretty much ideal. I mean, this is one of the best possible landing spots that you can get for a running back. Frank Gore is 34 years old, and Robert Turbin is a replacement-level type talent. So while the floor is low because of how raw and undisciplined Marlon Mack is just as a project coming out of South Florida, I mean, his ceiling is very, very high, and his situation was pretty much perfect for a back.
19 on your list, a guy that I don't feel like he's gotten a whole lot of love from people, Carlos Henderson, receiver out of Louisiana Tech that the Broncos took. And maybe that's because people still see, you know, Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas and the guys over there.
Yeah, and Emmanuel Sanders is 30, and Demaryius turns 30 later this year. So both of those guys pretty soon are going to be on the wrong side of the age curve. Carlos Henderson was the best tackle-breaking wide receiver in this class. That shows up in his Pro Football Focus stats. That shows up when you watch him play. It showed up in Matt Harmon's reception perception charting of him. It shows up in his measurables, in his combine measurables. He ran 4.46 at 5'11", 199. I mean, he's kind of built like a running back. He had a 10'11" broad jump, which is just absurd, and that shows his short area explosiveness and burst. Carlos Henderson was active on special teams throughout his college career. He spent 3 years at Louisiana Tech. He was their kickoff returner all 3 years. And John Moore, formerly of RotoViz, now of PFF, has shown that past special teams value can be a positive indicator for receivers transitioning to the pros. Antonio Brown was a guy who went in the sixth round out of Central Michigan, I believe it was.
Yes.
And he was a big-time special teams player in college. T.Y. Hilton was a guy who went in the third round out of Florida International. He was a big-time special teams returner in college, as was Carlos Henderson. Last year, Carlos Henderson was number two in the nation in kickoff return average, 32.2 yards per kickoff return, and he had three career kickoff return touchdowns. The Broncos are desperate for help in the middle of the field. We have seen that in their in-season acquisitions of Vernon Davis and A.J. Derby the past 2 years, and Carlos Henderson will play in the middle of the field at slot receiver. I think he gets on the field really quickly. I don't know if that he's an impact fantasy player right away, but you know, if Demaryius or Emmanuel Sanders goes down, then you know that could come into play. And I think that long term he's an excellent prospect.
I have some insight into number 18, Chris Godwin, Penn State receiver. I watch a lot of Penn State football because I live in Central PA, and that's like the major topic that people are into around here. You know, 3 years. He only played 3 years at Penn State. True junior, left school, had a lot of production his last 2 years. Dominated at the combine. People were really surprised by his spark scores and his numbers. I don't think that showed up as much on tape. What he did do a lot on tape is he won a lot of 50-50 balls, made a lot of contested catches. And I think what I like the most is talking with some of the folks at Penn State. They describe him as sort of a pro's pro. You know, he was the guy that was always catching balls off the jugs machine, getting there early, taking notes in the meetings. You know, he has approached his college career with the professionalism that it's not everything, Evan, but it makes a difference when guys get to the NFL because you're looking to study, you know, to make sure you understand the offense, the intricacies of the routes, the defenses you're going against, the defenders. I mean, guys like that have a much better chance for success than guys that are just straight up ballers, but they don't really get into the nuance of the game because so much of it in the pros is the nuance of the game. So I just thought that was a little added insight because, you know, they also tell me guys that aren't like that. So they told me there's other guys that aren't like that at all. So Godwin stuck out based on his professionalism as a college player.
Yeah, and he is kind of in a similar situation to Juju Smith-Schuster, who we are going to get to at number 16. But he checks a lot of boxes coming out as a prospect. It's just not clear. Like, his path to opportunity is not clear right now because the Bucs just made DeSean Jackson the highest paid receiver in free agency. Mike Evans is young and not going anywhere. And Chris Godwin was a perimeter receiver at Penn State. Both of those guys are perimeter receivers. I think the Bucs' primary slot receiver this year is really going to be Cameron Brate. And then we'll see A.J. Howard on the line of scrimmage as their Y tight end. So it's not clear. There's not a clear path to opportunity, but we're kind of betting on talent and betting on how good of a prospect Chris Godwin is.
Deontay Foreman, big boy, big back out of Texas, 6'1", 250, went to the Houston Texans.
Yeah, he was listed at 6'1", 249 on the Texas website, and he showed up to the combine at 6'2", 233. So, you know, this is one of the cases where, like, the college lists him as significantly bigger than he actually was, although he's still, he's a bulldozer back for sure. Kind of runs like a finesse back. He's not like a big-time tackle-breaking, he doesn't run like a power back, but he had great feet for a big guy. And a similar knock was made on Le'Veon Bell coming out of college. Le'Veon Bell, of course, had the big edge in terms of his receiving skills, and then, you know, cut a ton of weight and just became a much better athlete, a much better, he just became a lot quicker. And Dante Foreman actually showed up to rookie minicamp. Like, they wouldn't even let him practice. They put him on an exercise bike because he wasn't in good enough shape. So actually the fact that he was listed at 250 at Texas, and then, I mean, like, his weight, it seems like his weight might be fluctuating. Either way, he ran 4.45 at the Texas Pro Day. He was the 2006 Doak Walker Award winner as the top running back in the nation, which is pretty impressive, considering that he was, you know, all the good running backs in this class he was competing against. I really did not love him as a prospect, but I think the Texans want him to contribute early. I watched their post-draft presser, and Bill O'Brien was like, yeah, we want him to be a guy who jumps in and helps us as a first and second down complementary back. And then, hey, I mean, if he outplays Lamar Miller as an interior runner, I mean, I think he could take those duties away from Lamar Miller. It just comes down to performance. I didn't love him as a prospect, but I think the situation he landed in was pretty good. He's going to be he's going to an offense where the quarterback now has dual threat capabilities in Deshaun Watson. And, you know, it's just one of those situations where I don't always trust my own pre-draft analysis, because I know that I'm not perfect, and they used a pretty high pick on him, and he went in a pretty good situation, and there are definitely some positive indicators on his profile.
You mentioned earlier number 16, Juju Smith-Schuster, that went to the Pittsburgh Steelers, where you would think that they didn't really need a receiver, but they took him anyway.
Right, and it's just like a signal that they just don't trust Martavis Bryant. Now, all the reports in the offseason have been glowing on Martavis. I mean, we had OTAs start for the Steelers yesterday, and I mean, you know, Martavis is up to 225 pounds. Apparently, he was just working his butt off in Nevada, like coaching kids during his time away from the game. And I mean, I think that there are a lot of reasons to be optimistic about him. But the track record of guys with suspensions like that is, you know, they don't just always come back and you know, go be great for the next 5 years. So, and I mean, he's going to be on a short leash. Like, he can't afford to, you know, miss a drug test or anything like that, because that would result, I think, in another full year suspension, if not like an indefinite suspension. So he's treading on very thin ice, Martavis is, and the Steelers know that. And look, if they do get Martavis rolling, you know, and they've got Antonio Brown, and they don't have much at tight end. So there has been some after losing Ladarius Green, who they were forced to release. I think that, you know, there has been some discussion of the Steelers using more 3 and 4 receiver sets. And there has been some discussion of Juju Smith playing a big slot role where he would compete with Eli Rogers, who was, you know, just an average, pretty run-of-the-mill slot receiver for the Steelers last year. So if Juju Smith is ready to go, I think that we could see him in the slot right away. He's absurdly young. I don't think I've ever seen a player come out who is this young entering the pros. He will not turn 21 until late November. He's over 3 years younger than Cooper Kupp. I like him as a prospect, it's just, you know, when is he going to get on the field? That's the question.
So the next one, Joe Williams, he has been the subject of a lot of conversation this last couple weeks after he got drafted by the 49ers because of Kyle Shanahan and his track record, his history at that position. I've been taking him maybe higher than I should be in NFL 10s because of my faith in Bobby Turner and Kyle Shanahan, but you're not as high on him as a lot of other people.
No. I'm way higher on him than anybody else. I've looked at other people's dynasty rankings, and I mean, people don't even put him in the top 20. I've got him number 15. I did tweet about him at one point. Like, I don't even have him in the top 45 redraft backs because I still think that Carlos Hyde is going to be the 49er starter. But in Dynasty, I'm super, super high on him. I have not pulled the trigger on him in any redraft formats yet. And I probably will not until I see him play in the preseason. But part of that is just I don't like to take shots, like late round shots on running backs, unless they're like big time pass catchers. And, you know, that's just sort of my philosophy. Like, I'll use late round picks on Chris Thompson, Shane Vereen, Darren Sproles, those types of guys. This is the big deficiency that Joe Williams has, is that he dropped 5 of his 27 catchable targets in college, and he only had 27 catchable targets at all, which suggests that, you know, the coaching staff was not like, all right, we got to get this guy the ball in the passing game. And then when he did get his opportunities, I mean, he dropped a ton of them. So, but he had the number 2 speed score among running backs in this class behind only Leonard Fournette. He ran 4.41 at, I believe, 210 pounds. And, you know, it's not just that he's been very, very polarizing, because 2 49ers beat writers have come out and said that they think he could take the starting job from Carlos Hyde. And Carlos Hyde has a lot of support inside the fantasy community from some big-time fantasy analysts, and they don't like to hear that about their guy. At the same time, like, this was a guy that the 49ers, number 1, traded up for. He was signed off on by not only Kyle Shanahan, but by Bobby Turner, who I believe has been the running backs coach. Like, he was the running backs coach for Mike Shanahan back in, like, the Olandis, Gary, and Tatum Bell days. I mean, he's a highly, highly respected, longtime running backs coach. And just the fact that they traded up for this guy at all. I think that the community is still too low on Joe Williams. And, you know, let's say Carlos Hyde does keep the starting job, Ross, for this year, which, I mean, I expect him to do that. He's been a good back in the NFL. But he's also in a contract year. And, I mean, are the 49ers going to go pay Carlos Hyde big money? You know, probably not, even if he has a good season. So Joe Williams, any way you slice it, is in an excellent situation. He is a good prospect. He, you know, had that great speed score. He averaged over 190 rushing yards per game over his final 7 games at Utah. You know, he's a guy that I could talk about for a really long time. But I'm definitely high on him, and I think that everyone should be high on him.
How about number 14 on your list, Zay Jones, the second-round wide receiver out of East Carolina that went to Buffalo? He's been dealing with a sprained knee, but he is a guy that crushed the pre-draft process.
Yes, he did. He had elite spark. He was super productive in college. As a senior last year at East Carolina, he set the FBS, you know, NCAA record for single-season receptions. He had 158 receptions, dropped just 6 of his 164 catchable targets. He averaged only 10.7 yards per catch in his college career, which is super, super low. A big reason for that is because at East Carolina, they almost used him as like a running back. I mean, they threw him bubble screens all the time. You know, the offense was just built around Zay Jones. So that one metric is a little bit like, you know, what the heck is going on here with 10.7 yards per catch? But when you watch him play, you understand it. I think he's a rich man's Robert Woods. I think we'll see him play on the interior in Buffalo. And I think that he can become a Jordan Matthews type of receiver at 6'2", 201, but he has better hands than Jordan Matthews. And this is another guy that his team traded up for him. The Bills traded up to get him at number 37, and he is immediately paired with his old receivers coach at East Carolina. He's got like some kind of funky name that I can't pronounce, but so he will have a level of comfort there. And then the Bills declined Sammy Watkins' 5th-year option. So it is conceivable that Zay Jones could become the Bills' number 1 receiver by as soon as 2018. He will definitely be their number 2 receiver this year.
Number 13, you mentioned him earlier, tight end O.J. Howard with the Bucks.
Yeah, tight end O.J. Howard. So probably the best blocking tight end I've ever seen come out of college. Great, great athlete at the combine. Was not super productive. I mean, if you just look at his counting stats this past year, they look pretty good. But I think Alabama played like 14 or 15 games, so they're a little bit pumped up by that. Only scored 7 touchdowns during his 4-year college career. 7 touchdowns in his career. We've seen tight ends like that who just don't score touchdowns in college struggle to do that in the pros. Eric Ebron and Zach Ertz are two good examples of that. O.J. Howard at Alabama, you know, you don't see him making a lot of plays down the field when you watch him. They would manufacture touches for him, give him a lot of pitches and dump-offs, but you know, he's not out there like running routes like an Evan Ingram or a David Njoku would. I think that partly had to do with quarterback play. Their quarterback play last year was atrocious. But, I mean, it's a little bit concerning. Like, I think that he is going to have a learning curve as a receiver. I think he's going to be on the field a lot as a rookie, and he can develop a lot of these skills because he's such a good athlete. But I don't think we're going to see big impact from him in year one, which is usually the case for tight ends. And long term, I actually have him lowest among the three tight ends here.
Okay, let's get to another tight end. You have Evan Ingram, number 12 for the Giants.
And he's such a tough guy to figure out because, I mean, the Giants kind of put themselves in a difficult spot. So they are definitely going to run a 3-receiver offense. There has been some discussion that they are going to change up their personnel packages this year. I mean, I think that that's just fluff. I mean, they went out and signed Brandon Marshall, and they bring back Sterling Shepard and Odell Beckham. Like, they're not taking these guys off the field to play more 2 tight end sets. So they need Evan Ingram to be able to block. They need him to be, you know, that tight end in the 3-by-1 11 personnel. And so they need him to block. So Mike Sullivan, their OC, comes out and says, yeah, we're going to ask him to do traditional tight end things. But that's not what Evan Ingram is. He's 6'3", 234 pounds. He's a big wide receiver. And if you watch him block at Ole Miss, I mean, he's terrible. He was a terrible blocker. And they didn't even use him to block because they knew that what his strengths and weaknesses are. So the Giants put themselves in a very difficult position with Evan Ingram. With that said, I mean, if everything does come together for him, I think that he has the highest ceiling from a fantasy standpoint in this tight end class because he's such a good receiver. And, you know, he's a receiver. He catches the ball naturally. He ran in the low 4.4s. You know, he's a receiver through and through. And I hope the Giants realize that and are able to get him on the field a lot and use him in that capacity.
Then your tight end alley finishes up with Njoku at 11.
Yeah, so I think that if you look at the Browns' 2 first-round picks, or they had 3. Yeah, they had 3. It was Njoku, Jabril Peppers, and Myles Garrett. I was forgetting about Myles Garrett. I think all 3 of those guys, they're just going to throw them into the fire. We're going to see Jabril Peppers as the strong safety, and he's just going to play like every snap. I mean, I would want to get him in an IDP dynasty league. Myles Garrett, of course, he's going to be on the field. David Njoku, I mean, they cut Gary Barnidge. So David Njoku is just – he's going to play like every snap right away. I know that people are concerned about the quarterback situation with him. And, I mean, I think that that's very fair. But I think he gives you the best shot at immediate usefulness in fantasy. I expect him to be a guy that we are looking at in daily fantasy at one point or another, because I think he'll be priced low. And if he shows that, you know, within the first few games he's getting targets, then I think we could potentially be looking at him to play him in daily fantasy, you know, assuming that his salary is low. And then long term, I mean, I thought he was the best, like the best or the most dynamic receiving tight end in this class. He is a monster after the catch. He averaged over 11 yards after the catch per reception. I mean, that was the most eye-popping statistic that any player had coming out of this draft to me. He is a good blocker. Well, I shouldn't say he's a good blocker, but he has a lot of experience. He, you know, he's not O.J. Howard, but he has a lot of experience playing on the line of scrimmage, and he was a high-effort blocker who clearly took pride in his blocking. And, I mean, he could largely get the job done, which that is being a good blocker for a college tight end. So I think that we are going to, you know, there are no concerns about his playing time, and he could potentially become the Browns, you know, he could become a go-to guy very, very early on. Corey Coleman disappointed us a little bit as a rookie, and Kenny Britt, you know, I mean, I think he's solid, but he's, you know, not someone that an incredible talent like David Njoku could, you know, wouldn't overcome. I think that David Njoku could become the Browns' number one receiving option fairly quickly.
Number 10 on your list, a guy that I've taken, I think, in at least one MFL 10 league, and that is Samaje Perine, the running back out of Oklahoma that the Redskins took.
Yeah, and the beat writers already expect him to be the lead back in Washington. His competition will be Rob Kelly, who has really no passing game skills. And people talk about like Samaje Perine, like he's similar, but that's not really the case. He had 40 catches in 3 years at Oklahoma, despite sharing the backfield with Joe Mixon. I mean, I don't think he's going to become Le'Veon Bell as a receiver, but I think that he can be functional in that aspect. And it looks like he's going to be their starter as a rookie.
Yeah, and that's significant when you consider the Redskins. They got a really good offensive line. Bill Callahan, I think that's a lot of good opportunity there. There's also already some favorable reports, Evan, about Kareem Hunt in Kansas City.
Another situation where the team traded up to get him. So they were clearly targeting this player. I think that Spencer Ware is much more of an obstacle in the way of Kareem Hunt than Rob Kelly is for Samaje Perine. But Kareem Hunt has a better track record as a receiver, really looking for backs who can catch passes. And I liked him as a player on tape. Now, his combine was poor. But I really liked him as a player, showed an innate ability to make himself skinny through small spaces. You know, that's something that, like, Frank Gore has been living on for the last, like, half decade. And I think that Kareem Hunt really showed that ability. And he was a dominant four-year producer at Toledo, again, who caught a ton of passes. So while I was disappointed in his combine, I do think he's a good player. Clearly the Chiefs think he's a good player, and I think that he will be involved as a rookie. To what extent, I'm not entirely sure, but I think that he will be like a, you know, he will be a factor as a rookie. I don't know that he is going to be you know, as active as Samaje Perine looks likely to be, but longer term, I think because of that receiving ability, Kareem Hunt is a better dynasty prospect by a hair than Samaje Perine.
John Ross, the receiver the Bengals took in the top 10, is number 8 on your list.
Yeah, so I think that John Ross has a chance to become a Brandon Cooks sort of player, but I think I'm lower on him than most other dynasty rankings. I don't know where the targets are going to come from in the short term, and I think that that could be an issue in the long term as well. AJ Green under contract through 2019. Tyler Boyd, while people kind of overlook him, he is under contract through 2019 and very much has an established role in their offense. Brandon LaFell, you know, a guy that look, I think he's, you know, a very average player, but he's also the sort of player that a coaching staff will like and feel comfortable putting on the field a lot, because he'll block and, you know, he's going to be where he's supposed to be. And he's under contract, I believe, for the next two seasons. And then Tyler Eifert is in a contract year, but assuming that he has a solid year, and I think that he will, I would expect the Bengals to extend Tyler Eifert's contract. I don't know where the targets are going to come here. And then they have two backs who can catch passes in Joe Mixon and Giovanni Bernard. Giovanni Bernard is also under contract long term. So I don't know where the targets are going to come from. I don't know how we're going to feel comfortable starting John Ross in a fantasy league week to week. He has a really bad injury history. He was only a big producer in college for 1 year. So those are the reasons that I'm lower on him than I think most other people. With that said, he's a top 10 pick in the NFL draft, and he's got serious, serious big play ability. So I think that he belongs where I have him.
The next guy you have is another receiver, Mike Williams, number 7, who went to the Chargers.
Yeah, these landing spots for these receivers were just really, really bad. I mean, I think that the landing spot from a reality NFL football standpoint for John Ross was really good, but just really not good for his chances of being an early fantasy contributor. And it's even worse for Mike Williams. I mean, Keenan Allen is under contract through 2020. I realize he's had injury woes. So has Mike Williams. I mean, he's already missing time with a back injury. He missed all of the 2015 season with a neck injury. Tyrell Williams, as a second-year player in the NFL, went for over 1,000 yards last season. He is under contract this year, and then he's a restricted free agent in 2018. So he's essentially under contract for the next two seasons. Hunter Henry is under contract through 2019. Travis Benjamin is under contract through 2019. I sort of doubt he makes it to 2019, but at the moment, you know, he's got a spot on the roster and in the receiver core. And then for 2017, Antonio Gates and Dontrell Inman are, of course, under contract. So I don't know how we're going to be using Mike Williams. I mean, look, things can change in the preseason. Keenan Allen gets hurt, or, look, Mike Williams just beats out Tyrell Williams. It's possible that Mike Williams severely, or just makes, you know, all the things that I just said look really, really silly. But I didn't like this pick from a real life standpoint. I thought the Chargers should have taken Malik Hooker. And I don't like this pick from a fantasy standpoint either.
It's interesting. Alvin Kamara, you have at 6. That seems pretty high.
Super, super high. And to me, he was the biggest winner of any player in fantasy terms in the draft, because he went to the ideal landing spot. I mean, the Saints every single year lead the NFL, or almost every single year, you know, they finish one or two every year in running back targets. Drew Brees throws the ball to his backs, and the Saints traded up for him. They actually sent a 2018 second round pick to draft Alvin Kamara in the 3rd. They obviously love him. They have a role for him early. He's going to take over that old Travaris Cadet role as a receiving back, where I think Travaris Cadet had almost 50 catches last season. And then the long-term outlooks for Mark Ingram and Adrian Peterson are just really, really murky. You know, Adrian Peterson now is 32 years old. We have no idea what he has left. He signed a 2-year deal, but all the guaranteed money is in the first year, and I mean, he's just very year to year. And the same is the same deal with Mark Ingram. From year to year, the Saints are just going to be making a decision on him in off seasons. I mean, I did not love Alvin Kamara as a runner between the tackles coming out of Tennessee, but he did show potential in that area. And I think that this will, you know, like if say if like Alvin Kamara had been drafted by the Jaguars in the second round and jumped into a committee with TJ Yeldon and Chris Ivory, and the Jaguars had taken, I don't know, Solomon Thomas at number four, you know, I would not have Alvin Kamara particularly high. But he went to such a good landing spot that I really, really raised him up. And I think that I'm higher on him than most people coming out of the draft.
Sounds like it. What about Dalvin Cook, who you have at number five?
Spots one through five, you know, this is where you want to be drafting in your dynasty rookie draft. And if you know, these are the players that you want in your dynasty rookie draft, because they are going to be used early and they have a chance to be long-term every week starters. All these guys in the top five, and that starts with Dalvin Cook. From like a redraft standpoint, it's not an ideal situation because he's going to have to be competing for snaps with Latavius Murray and Jerick McKinnon, and the offensive line and the offense as a whole are both below average in Minnesota. With that said, Dalvin Cook played with one of the worst offensive lines in college football last year at Florida State. That was noted by Graham Barfield, who does a yards created study every offseason, looking at how well college offensive lines run block in addition to many other things. So Dalvin Cook played behind an offensive line at Florida State that couldn't block, yet he still had a monster season last year, and in 3 years was able to break Warrick Dunn's all-time rushing record at FSU. So he's a very good prospect despite his subpar combine. The landing spot wasn't great, and that's the reason that he's number five on this list. But I think that he will be useful as a rookie, and he has a chance to become like a top 10 NFL running back.
Number four on the list, Leonard Fournette. Not much of a surprise there, although I guess the surprise might be that he's not even higher.
Yeah, I mean, I think that these running backs – so I think that Dalvin Cook is pretty clearly at number five here, but I think that the running backs – Mixon and McCaffrey and Fournette are all pretty interchangeable. You can take them in any order, and I don't think that it would be wrong. Leonard Fournette, not as good of a receiver as Christian McCaffrey and Joe Mixon, and I definitely lean toward running backs that can catch passes. All my dynasty leagues are PPR, and even in non-PPR leagues, you know, guys who catch passes, they are going to be more consistent on a week-to-week basis, because when their team falls behind, they're still going to be in the game and they're still going to be racking up yards for you because, you know, that they'll be catching those passes. Leonard Fournette has some limitations, I think, as a receiver and needs to become better as a pass protector. But from like a size and straight line speed standpoint, he is the number one back in this class, and the Jaguars defense is awesome. So I think the Jaguars defense, if it finally plays up to its potential, and last year it was a top 10 defense, and they got significantly better with offseason additions, they should be in every game, and they should be feeding the ball to Leonard Fournette. So I think that I would take him first in a redraft league. But I think that longer term, Joe Mixon and Christian McCaffrey, because of their receiving ability, give you a little bit more upside. But again, I think that these guys are all very much interchangeable.
Number three, Christian McCaffrey.
So the concern with Christian McCaffrey is the offense that he is going to. The Panthers, you know, whereas a guy like Alvin Kamara went to a team where running backs everywhere get peppered with targets in New Orleans, every year that happens. In Carolina, they don't throw to the running back at all. And, I mean, I don't think that that's just because they have lacked a receiving back. I think it is because of Cam Newton's style of play. Historically, quarterbacks that run often do not throw to the running back. And we've talked about this for the last few years. And Cam Newton is, you know, he's a guy who he drops back to pass, you know, and he surveys the field and he launches a throw or he takes off and runs. And, you know, looking at the running back as an outlet receiver is not something that he historically has done. I think the Panthers want him to become that, though. And it's just a question of whether they can execute in that approach. I mean, their first and second round picks were guys who have similar skill sets. Obviously, Christian McCaffrey is better and more prepared for the pros than Curtis Samuel, but these guys can be used in similar roles. Like, I think if Christian McCaffrey went down, I think that Curtis Samuel might fill that Christian McCaffrey role in the Panthers offense. But, you know, are we going to see a lot of receptions for Christian McCaffrey in Carolina? Obviously, he has the ability to do it. It's just, will they be able to execute? And then how many touchdowns is he going to score? Because historically, Cam Newton has hurt the touchdown totals of his running backs. And, I mean, they're still going to have a role, I think, for Jonathan Stewart. So how many passes is McCaffrey going to catch? How many touchdowns is he going to score? I think he's a great real life, and he's still a great fantasy prospect for sure. It's just I don't have a lot of clarity right now on, you know, projecting him statistically.
Looking at number two on your list, Joe Mixon, that feels high for me, man. I mean, they still have Gio Bernard and Jeremy Hill there. They still got a bunch of receivers. Plus, there's the off-the-field stuff going on with him as well. You just never know in a dynasty league how long, you know, he'll be able to stay on the straight and narrow in the NFL.
Yeah, I was hesitant on Joe Mixon before the draft because I wanted to see where he was drafted. I wanted to see how much a team was willing to invest in him. And the Bengals invested a mid to late second round pick. That's enough for me. I mean, I think that he was the best back in this class. And I think that he has the best chance to become a David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell sort of producer. Giovanni Bernard is coming off an ACL tear that occurred, I think, last November. There have been some whispers that he might not be ready for week one. Some beat writer reported that he was going to actually participate in OTAs, but that did not happen. And Joe Mixon is just way, way, way better than Giovanni Bernard. And Jeremy Hill has been awful the last two seasons. So I think that this is largely a bet on talent trying to get a back that can be that monster week-to-week difference maker and league winner in the David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell sort of realm. And I think that Joe Mixon has the best chance to be that guy.
Number one on your list. I guess people have guessed it since we haven't said him yet. It's a wide receiver, Corey Davis with the Tennessee Titans.
So team uses a top five pick on the guy. He goes to play with a quarterback who is clearly on the rise and has, I think, a very, very bright future in the NFL in Marcus Mariota, and has a chance to be the Titans' number one receiver from the get-go, and was a prospect that I really liked. Compared him to Brandon Marshall coming out of an earlier career, Brandon Marshall, where his run after catch was just spectacular, a spectacular run after catch receiver, big, I think plenty athletic, although we did not get any numbers on him before the draft because of the ankle injury. So checks boxes for draft capital invested, opportunity, paired up with an excellent quarterback, and really liked him coming out. So he checks pretty much every box that I'm looking for in a dynasty prospect. And he could be, he could be a factor for sure right away in redraft leagues. I think that if you need a running back, I wouldn't have any problem with taking one of the running backs over Corey Davis. But, you know, again, I play in dynasty leagues that are PPR, and finding like an 8 to 10 year start, a potential 8 to 10 year starter at wide receiver is like that. That's gold in a dynasty league. So I have Corey Davis number one.
Speaking of gold, this podcast and last week, your rookie dynasty rankings, all 50, absolute gold. I love the breakdown. Love the depth of knowledge on these players. That's why you're the best, dude. Check him out on Twitter, at Evan Silva, the RotoWorld.com superstar. A lot of people loved Evan's appearance last Friday on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. A little different conversation we had about the intersection of fantasy and real football, the issues with offensive line play. We told some good stories. How NFL teams use RotoWorld. Highly encourage you to listen to that one if you didn't already. We will be back next week, as we always are, formulating a plan for an awesome show next week. You know what to do in terms of downloading us on multiple devices, the iTunes rankings and comments. And of course, if you don't have the SeatGeek app on your phone, you're doing it wrong. Make sure you put the code in Ross so you get the $20 when you put the code in. Or go to saxunderwear.com/Tucker. So, so good. I'm stuffed. That was an over an hour meal. I usually eat a lot faster than that. I think we're done here.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Feast Podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcast, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.
So I've been telling you guys about TrueCar for a while now, and what's amazing about it is as soon as my wife said, honey, I need to get a new car, I said, TrueCar, because they have the information on anything that's been sold in your area. Think about it. 3 million cars sold, over 13,000 dealers, over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available, average savings of over $3,000 off MSRP. Using TrueCar, you can easily find the car you want. And here's the key. TrueCar will show you what other people in your area paid for the car you want. Now you know what a fair price is, so you can feel confident. Before we even started looking, she was looking at Explorers, Tahoes. I said, hey, look at TrueCar, and you can find out exactly what other people have paid in the area. It is awesome. TrueCar customers are more likely to enjoy a faster buying process when they connect with TrueCar certified dealers. Plus, TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.